Hello, everyone. We welcome you warmly to our morning roundtable discussion. It is a beautiful, bright, glorious November day in Plainfield, November 3rd, 2019. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, in the United States of America. So glad you could join us this morning. We will start with our morning prayer.
This is Mrs. Eddy's prayer given at the Massachusetts Metaphysical College. It can be found in the Green Book, otherwise called Mary Baker Eddy's 6 Days of Revelation, compiled by Richard Oakes on page 171. O my God, I offer as a consecrated gift upon thine altar a heart dedicated to thy service, lips speaking only words of charity, love, and truth, thoughts striving to be only the true thoughts of the mind of God. Help me to endure unto the end, strong in the faith, powerful in the truth, all the influence that I can bring to bear, all the force of tongue or pen that is mine, I offer in thy service. May heaven help, consecrate, and accept.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, well, I guess we'll get into our watching point today, Linda.
Watch number 496. Watch that you realize that you are a tear to error, that your consciousness of God is so effective and powerful, and you are the custodian of such vast power, that the moment you apply it, it does things to dissipate error and leaves the infinite good filling all space. The time must come when we recognize ourselves as aggressors rather than merely defenders of the faith. There is a temptation to feel that there exists a great lie claiming to be power and that we must forever protect ourselves against it. Like the knights of old, we must ride forth with shield and sword to defend ourselves against error, so that we may destroy it. Yet this conception does not fit Mrs. Eddy's statement that she used to do her work with the realization that God is all. The answer is that this phase of our experience is a necessary but passing one. We must recognize ourselves as terrors to error until we can rise to the realization that there is no error, since God is all. Some students fail because they regard animal magnetism as a lion and themselves as but a rabbit. We are the lion, equipped with God's power. The lie retreats when we face it with divine courage. Mrs. Eddy once said, quote, "Animal magnetism is powerless, but you must declare against it as though it had all power," end quote.
Thank you. Any comments?
I have one comment. Somebody once told me that things like being timid may not seem like a big deal, but they're actually like more subtle forms of sin. And I think that this is kind of what this is being brought up here, that you can't be timid or allow yourself to be intimidated by what seems like a vast power, and you have to reverse that belief in your own thought and understand that the power is on your side, not on the opposition's.
Thank you very much. Good point.
Excellent point, because what is timidity?
Fear?
Worrying about yourself?
It's personal sense.
Oh.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Which is what we talked about last week.
Why would you be timid unless you were concerned about hurting someone's, offending someone?
Well, and it is those other things. It's fear. It's selfishness. It is a selfhood apart from God, timid. And we're going to get into this today in our topic on everlasting punishment, because as Michael brought out, I mean, I was super timid for a long time, and I thought, well, that was okay. I didn't think I was breaking any of the Ten Commandments, so therefore I must be a good person. Therefore, I didn't necessarily have to change. But because of that, as Michael said, it's a sin, timidity, because you're admitting to another power besides the one God. I had to come upon that. And until I did, guess what? I suffered. I was in everlasting punishment. Took a long time for me to get that in my thick skull at the time. That this was, I was sinning. Everlasting punishment is our topic today. So, yes, that's a beautiful watching point. Think about this watching point when you, before you do a watch. You have all power. Mrs. Eddy spoke from the allness of God, not some little thing crying out in appeal, but all power. When your prayer is unselfish, when you're working for the spiritualization of thought, spiritualization of mankind, this power comes over you. What is that? Mrs. Eddy says in Science and Health, whatever holds human thought in line with unselfed love receives directly
the divine power.
The divine power. You must always remember that. We're not little timid things that get pushed around and intimidated. And if you think that, and if you keep thinking that, especially after you know better, you will suffer. You will be in everlasting punishment until you stop. And we've all been there. I certainly have. So, thank you for that. And anyone else?
Yeah, I think that God's law, I am all, when obeyed, or if we make the effort to obey it, I am all. So anything else beside that is not. That has helped me a lot to remember those little, the three words, I am all.
Yes. And as was brought out in the watching point, this is we're passing through a stage where error does seem to be real. We talk about being protected and all of that, but ultimately there's nothing to protect yourself from. If God is all, what is there to protect yourself from? But at this point, as she said, you have to act as if it has power, even though it doesn't, until you prove it doesn't.
And when it was taught here years ago, the thing that impressed me was that we have the authority from God, we have the ability from God, and we have God's power to stand against and eliminate error.
Yes.
That was very helpful. It took me a while to do it, but
yeah.
It's a freeing thing.
It is. And once you start working this, in the right sense, you will find out it's true. How do you think David defeated Goliath? Not because he thought he was some timid little boy that and this was an awful giant. He knew this principle, God's allness. Anyone who's ever done anything, ever, and including now, has at least glimpsed some concept of this truth.
And when you get back to where we are, you know, in terms of having to protect ourselves or anything like that, you soon realize the only thing you need to protect yourself from is the false belief that God is not all power, that there is some other power besides God.
Thank you. And the only fear that you should have is fear of disobedience to God.
That's the only legitimate fear.
So the golden text is love worketh no ill to his neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law, Romans. But then we get into what I was just talking about. Jeffrey, you want to read the first two citations in the responsive reading, please?
Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God, the powers that are ordained of God.
That be ordained of God.
Excuse me. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation.
Okay, resisteth, Jeremy, what it is to resist.
Well, I actually looked up that old forum post about being non-resistant to God and making no resistance to power, to God's power. Because I don't know, that really reminded me of it.
Yeah, me too.
So, but just being, you know, resisting him is what will make us, makes us a target, I guess, basically. So, because Laura Sargent says true substantiality is effulgent, translucent, and non-resistance. And that really stayed with me. So.
Yeah, the word resisteth, to stand against, to oppose, to rise against, act in opposition.
What would be your defense if you resist God? I don't know.
Thank you. Yes, you have no defense. And so how do you do this? Because this is damnation. This is everlasting punishment. How do you do this? Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I think self-will is definitely a resistance to God.
Thank you very much. You're going to do your will.
I want what I want, so don't get in my way.
Yes.
Or even I want this and I want it now.
Yes. You want, you know, you're healing. What was one of the, I think it was one of the watching points perhaps, where he said, I don't want the healing until I get the lessons learned, the understanding that I need. Because when you have a problem, it's just an opportunity to grow and get closer to God. There's a reason it comes to you, for a lesson. And if you're gracious and bow to learn that lesson and don't resist the ordinance, then you'll come out stronger and better before. But if you justify, and that's what Janet was saying, the selfs, that's the adamant of error, and God can't come through, and you will be miserable until you stop. And you can have a practitioner praying for you for 25 years. And I won't, sorry, the change has to come from within.
You had written on that forum post that Ira Knapp had gotten this voice that said to turn out your old tenets and put on one measure of humility and another measure and yet another measure, and then I'll abide with you and charity will abide with you. So, and I just love that. Turn out your old tenets.
That's it. This place has changed hands. And the idea of humility and what Jeremy was speaking about being non-resistant, well, that allows God's ordinances. And what is an ordinance?
Law.
His laws to operate, to go into your inward parts. But if you are resisting, what are some other ways you resist?
Living an ungodly life or unchristian life is a form of resistance.
Most definitely. And that's what, you know, the next verses, 1 Peter, and then also 1 Samuel with the story of Nabal. Well, and if you were doing things, like if you were timid and you won't give it up, you just continue to be timid, because that's your personality, or for whatever reason.
And you try to justify it.
And you justify it. You are sinning and you will suffer. If you were being fearful, I think I told you once how many times the Bible says, thou shalt not fear. It's a lot.
365, wasn't it?
Oh, what?
Once a day.
This time I have a reason to be afraid. I'm going to be afraid no matter what. You are resisting God's law and you will suffer. I did. It's sometimes these little things, you know, you think, well, I haven't committed adultery. I haven't stolen from anyone. I didn't kill anybody. Well, then, you know, then you're okay. No, it's these little foxes that spoil the vine and you've got to be aware of it. If you are negative and you insist on it, you're going to be doom and gloom. You don't want anybody to get too happy. If anybody says anything good, you'll bring it down to how well things are really awful. You insist on that when you're being told the joy is part of your being, your joy no man can take from you. You insist on it, you will suffer.
Or if you insist on worrying about someone or someone, something bad might happen, so I'm it's okay. I'm going to worry about it. I'm going to look out for them, and you know, because bad things happen to people, right?
And you see,
condemnation.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
Yeah, I don't deserve it.
No. I'm not worth anything. I'm worthless. I've never done anything right.
I can't speak up because who am I?
If you start out from knowing, as in science we should, that you are a child of God, that should correct it. But you've got to start taking the steps to do it. And if you refuse, you are resisting the ordinance.
Well, it feels like it's even burning a commandment. Well, it is because mm-hmm. of commandment one. But when I go that place myself, then I'm stealing from giving what I'm supposed to do to give to the world.
Yes.
Not working. So that hit me.
That's the biggest thing. All of these are self. Because as Luann said in her testimony, whenever that was a couple of weeks ago, this is all about stopping your testimony because you're all full of yourself. It's not a pretty picture. Don't think it is. It's an ugly picture. Because you might frame it in your mind that you're, you know, when I was timid, I thought, well, I was just being humble. Well, that was definitely not true. Or you can, what's the word? They use the word, you can cover up your sins by thinking it's making it appear something good. And that is also what we get into in this week's lesson about deception. That word that Jeremy looked up, dissimulation.
Dissimulation.
Which is?
Hiding under a false appearance.
Yeah.
Feigning, pretension. Pretension and hypocrisy.
Yes. And if you're spiritually minded, you will catch it in yourself, and you will definitely not be deceived when others, you know, pretend to be kind or loving when it really isn't kind or loving at all. They might have convinced themselves that it is, but if it's not divine, if it's not from God good, if it's human do-goody, it is not good. And it usually results, if not always, in things not working out. It's willful. So that deception part. And yeah, so why do we do this? And it's in the lesson as well, that we have to know that sin confers no pleasure. What pleasure are you getting out of this? Well, I know my timidity, then I thought, well, I wouldn't be asked to ever do anything because I was too shy. Well, that worked for a while, but then pretty soon all the things, oh, you're worthless, you're no good, you can't do anything, you're just, and then all the friends, other friends come And then pretty soon you don't feel very well, and pretty soon you can't do anything. So that's really...
And then pretty soon you're looking for a purpose for your life, and you can't find it in the way you're thinking. You've talked yourself into not doing a darn thing because you're so timid. And then you get up in the morning and you wonder, why am I here? What is there for me to do? And unless you turn to God and get God's direction and get a little bit of more courage and love enough.
Someone has their
Yeah, turn your computer off, please, or down. Until you get out of self, it doesn't have a happy ending.
And all these descriptions are all godless. It's all about self. It is personal sense. And it's very interesting because it says, they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. So who did it?
Themselves.
And you might start off thinking, oh yeah, oh, it's great, timid, no one will ask me to do anything. And just as I said, and Gary said, it gets worse and worse and worse. And pretty soon you can't do anything. You physically can't do anything. All the roof just caves in. So it's like, well, thanks a lot, you know, that I followed this train of thought that was so godless. And I have been on that train, and the effort it takes to turn myself around, finally, I got so tired of it. I said, I'm not going that way ever again. Shut up. And sometimes that's what you have to yell. Don't listen to those voices. I will hear no other voices. I will heed no other call. It's not your friend, and you will suffer. And it will seem like everlasting punishment until you stop. But this is just, and this isn't God doing it to you. You've done it to yourself. This is just ways to wake you up, to get you back on the right path, so you don't do it. If you didn't suffer, then you'd keep doing it. And what Joe wrote about, sin confers no pleasure, and this knowledge strengthens moral courage and increases the ability to master evil and to love good. And then she quotes the old Cole Porter song, I get no kicks from champagne. And then she said, I get no kick from guilt or shame. Mere self-pity doesn't thrill me at all. So tell me, why should it be true that I get a kick out of feeling blue? Well, why do you? Tell me, why do you? You must get something from it. You love your selfishness. You love to think about yourself. You'll just spend the day thinking about yourself and feeling miserable. Well, please do that. If you want to, do it, but just don't bother anybody else, okay? Because that's the thing. You end up bothering a lot of people. And you're certainly not helping the world situation while you're sitting there having a pity party, as Linda said. You're pulling everything down rather than aiding in its upliftment, which just brings satisfaction and joy and every good thing.
So why does Mrs. Eddy have a lesson, the subject of which is everlasting punishment?
I think to teach us exactly this. You know.
There's a doctrine among a lot of religious beliefs that there is such a thing,
yeah, that's true,
as everlasting punishment, that if you do certain things, or you know, you're damned forever, you'll be punished forever,
yeah,
that you're sunk, it's too late, there's no hope. Well, so what does the golden text have to say about that? Mrs. Evans used to love to teach this subject. She'd say, everlasting love destroys the belief of everlasting punishment. Because what is it that gets punished?
You punish yourself.
It's a sin.
Yeah. Sin punishes itself. Error. Truth destroys error. It's the errors of belief that get punished. And we feel it only when we hang on to them.
And that's just the way it is. So if you're suffering and tormented and all of this, well, then get rid of this false sense of self. And maybe you think you have, but if it's still going on, then dig deeper. There's more to be done. Maybe you're fooling yourself. Maybe you think you don't hate your neighbor, but maybe really you do.
And what does it take to be able to do this?
Discipline.
Discipline.
Persistence.
Consistency. And what is the unresistant thought? The unresistant thought?
Humility.
Thank you.
Humble thought.
Humility. Yeah, it requires humility to not resist, because resistance is the opposite of humility. So often, you know, feel bad about something and someone will come along and give me the truth, and it'll, you know, when you resist the truth, you feel like punching the messenger in the face, right? That's what they did to Jesus. That's what they did to every prophet. That's what they did to Mrs. Eddy. That's what they tried to do to a lot of her students. They didn't want to hear the message because they were resistant. But some people got it. Some people had the humility to look within themselves and say, ah, yes, it's this false belief that's doing this to me. Never be afraid to look deep within. If it's a false belief, unattach it from yourself. Let it go. Don't be embarrassed because you had a false belief. Don't be embarrassed because you suffered because of it. Let it go. It was never truly part of you.
As Carol said, God gives you the ability to do this in science and health. Nothing can vitiate the power bestowed upon you by God. You have this power. You just haven't exercised it. And I can't exercise it for you. No one could exercise it for me. You have to exercise it for yourself.
Be willing not to give up. Don't just, oh, I have to try it now. And if it doesn't work, oh, I'll never get it. Just keep going, keep going.
That's it.
Step upon.
Mm-hmm. That's very true.
There's a passage in Matthew that sort of bothers me. It's when Jesus is saying that he will sit on, when the Son of Man shall come in his glory and will sit upon the throne and gather all the nations and divide the sheep from the goats. And the goats are the ones that don't help other people. And they will go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into life eternal. That's always bothered me.
That's because you're taking it personally.
I guess so.
The sheep and the goats. He's not talking about people. He's talking about states of thought. The state of thought that is a goat is condemned to everlasting damnation because it is not of God. That is how we heal, by condemning false beliefs to everlasting damnation. The state of thought that is a sheep is the one that loves, that cares, that has humility, that grows closer to God effortlessly. Well, maybe sometimes not so effortlessly, but grows closer to God.
it seems that we are the sheep and we have to work to not allow ourselves to feel that we are the goat, I guess. We gotta resist that.
Yeah. God's true creation is the sheep. The lie about God's creation is the goat. Our job. Our job is to know who we truly are and be that image and likeness of our Creator.
I have a question, if I might. I knew somebody who, when they were very young, had an abortion, and she is much older now and still condemns herself. And I know most Christians would consider that to be unforgivable. I am not on either one side or the other of it, but I don't know how anyone could have suggestions for how to address that, because I have tried.
Mrs. Eddy says there is no unforgivable sin.
There is no fatal mistake.
And something that has helped me over the years is I did the best I could at the time.
Thank you. According to your understanding.
Paul was forgiven.
Paul was forgiven. And it's a big debate now, too, whether that is considered a sin or not. So I know the Christians do consider it a sin. But, you know, some of these things, yes, she did. She was doing the best she knew at the time. Is there anything she can do about it now to change what she did then? No. So you have to let it go and give the past to God. Otherwise, that's the accuser, the tormentor, who will torment you day and night.
It's everlasting punishment.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It
that's
is.
Really, it's sad, really, because I worked with a lady years ago who had this doctrine in whatever church she belonged to, and she was almost 80-something and still had this on her. You know, she had developed intractable pain, I'm sure, from that kind of thinking of being punished forever. It's rather sad to see from her 20s all the way 80-something, and she was still under this false sense of everlastingly being punished.
Yes, and that is a reason, and that's the Catholic system that we've talked about, where they, and other religions too, where they use this against you. You know, you did something, therefore you are a sinner. Well, you're born as a sinner, and you're going to die as a sinner. You're just a sinner. So yes, they use that against you, that you're just going to be damned forever and condemned forever.
And then some of them will say, but if you give us enough money, we'll
forgive you. Exactly. It's all this is false teaching. We talked about that in bearing false witness, false teachers who tell you this. But Christian Science doesn't say this. And you have to accept it, that that's not true. And there is no eternal sin, eternal damnation, eternal condemnation. And I think it's in this lesson where it says, if you've learned what you've needed to learn, then the penalty is removed. It says, I was going to get into this. If the evil is over in the repentant mortal mind, while its effects still remain on the individual, you can remove this disorder as God's law is fulfilled. And reformation cancels the crime. So if you have truly repented and are sorry, and in this case with this woman, I agree 100% with Carol. She was doing the best she could. Who's to judge what was right or wrong? I don't think any of us are judges over anyone else. Old theology will tell you that it's a terrible sin and you never should do it. But whoever, whatever, some of those things.
And that's killing her spirit.
It's killing her spirit. Thou shalt not kill. It's killing her spirit. She's repentant over it. Then it's over. There's nothing she can do about it now. This is era's way to keep you in everlasting punishment. And you have to be smart enough to understand that. You're listening, again, you're listening to the wrong voice. Go back to what does God say? What did God say about all this? What did Mrs. Eddy say in her textbook? And that will free you, because the truth makes you free.
That is why we have to be able to forgive ourselves if we are to forgive others.
Thank you.
And what did Jesus say to the crowd that brought to him the woman taken in adultery? Yeah, those of you who are totally without sin, go ahead, cast the first stone. So she should forgive herself.
Thank you. Yes.
Because God forgives.
Yeah. And trade that self-consciousness for the Christ consciousness. I know I struggled with being self-conscious for a long time. And then once you detect it, then when it tries to creep in again, it can't, you know, you can throw it out. But it's all related to self-consciousness and personal sense. And just trade that in for Christ consciousness, and then, gosh, it's just so much better.
Thank you. No, very true. There again, getting away with self.
This is thought from God who loves me.
That's right. And we ultimately know, too, there is no death. You couldn't really kill anything, even if you tried, because there is no
death.
Can't
kill spirit.
Yeah.
She also wasn't a personal creator.
She wasn't a personal creator. It's all, again, the belief of life and matter, which science is the only clear explanation of all of this. But if you're under old theology, yeah, you'll feel guilty and condemned. And some people actually, I mean, I know when they are feeling guilty and condemned, they get into situations where it continues, you know, abusive husbands or abusive this or abusive that, because somewhere they feel guilty, so they feel they deserve to be beaten and mistreated. And it's an awful situation until the truth makes one free. So watch these thoughts. Go back. Keep it simple. Go back to the basic truths. Don't get intellectual about it, because if you get intellectual and, oh, did I do this? Or maybe this was right. Maybe I shouldn't have done that. Or I did it once. Maybe I should have done it twice. You go on and on with this stuff. No. Is this a thought from God or not? Keep it simple.
Accentuate the positives. Eliminate the negatives. And don't mess with Mr. In Between.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, don't be a sheep wearing goat clothing.
Right. Well, and I liked, and that it was at citation 7 in Science and Health also, where Mrs. Eddy says, a corrupt mind is manifested in a corrupt body. Lust, malice, and all sorts of evil are diseased beliefs. Whoops. And you can destroy them only by destroying the wicked motives which produce them.
They are the goats.
And they will be punished everlastingly. Now, you know, I thought too, that word resistance to God, another word for that is rebellious, rebellion. And I remember years ago, I was kind of found this interesting, that cancer cells are supposed to be rebellious cells. If you indulge in a lot of rebellious thoughts for long periods of time and you don't get that you're to stop, well, sometimes your body acts up. And that's all it is. It's not to be feared, because if you can correct it, it doesn't have to be. But she's very clear on this. A corrupt mind is manifested in a corrupt body. Lust, carnal appetite, evil propensity, unlawful desire, malice, extreme enmity, a disposition to injure others without cause, the spirit of revenge, Those are diseased beliefs. So if you think that there is no price to thinking those diseased beliefs, think again. There is a price. But remember, too, you are in the Adam dream. Okay? And that's where you get your victory over it. This is the Adam dream. The false beliefs, the lust, the malice, the diseased condition. It's the Adam dream. The power apart from God, a selfhood other than God. You are dreaming the dream. And you need to be awakened into the truth about you, which is not rebellious. It does not resist. That's why I love the definition of grace, spirit or influence in man, to strengthen and regenerate. This is in you, the spirit. And regenerate means to implant holy affections in the heart, a virtue of divine origin. So God didn't make you with a tendency to want to be think beliefs, disease beliefs, and in all of this. That's not your nature. If you declare for the truth about yourself, your nature is to love God, to have holy affections. That's a wonderful grace of God. And how many people, how many stories have I heard about people in prison who have come to this and have totally repented and end up doing tremendous good in their lives, or other ways, or drug addicts, people who have had terrible pasts, and they've come to this, the amazing grace of God. We watched that movie about the guy that wrote the words to it anyway.
Yeah, that was a great movie. And what he went through in his life to still write those words shows a lot for him.
It does. It's amazing, amazing grace. So there's hope for everybody and everybody to get out of this sense of everlasting punishment, whatever it calls itself. And in the lesson, you know, we have the story of, well, Abigail was following all the things, right? She shewed evil. She did good. She sought peace. She ensued it. She tried to live peaceably with everybody.
And even the son of Belial.
Even the son of Belial. And she was lifted out of that situation and ended up, you know, marrying David. While Nabal, again, he was selfish in dreamland, selfish, nasty.
Materialistic.
Hard-hearted. Greedy. Thank you.
Resistant.
Carnal mind resistant. Not even trying to do the right thing. And so look what happened to him until he wakes up. And Mrs. Eddy makes that clear, either here or hereafter. And in his case, it was hereafter.
I love the line, he is such a son of Belial that a man cannot even speak to him. It sounds a lot.
Gives you good ideas on what that was all about.
Yeah. So it's a good example of how to receive everlasting love or how to fall into that everlasting punishment category. And David was a bit of a mixture. You know, he certainly was good, but then he was ready to be vengeful, wasn't he? And, you know, that happens. Things happen to you and you say, my God, what's the matter with that person? I'm gonna really knock the you-know-what out of him. And then you have to stop. Abigail stopped him. And that's, he loved her for it. And saved that whole situation. So, I mean, vengeance is something, you know, it's kind of, especially if you've thought wrong has been done to you. And then we get into another topic, well, like with Christ Jesus. I mean, he did not do anything wrong. He did not deserve anything. He was spotless. I would say that about Mrs. Eddy too. And that can happen. And people will try to make your life as miserable as possible. That's what story of Joseph in the Bible. Almost all these, Daniel in the lion's den. These people had done no wrong. And so, what did they do?
They didn't revenge. They
rose above it.
Mm-hmm.
They forgave.
They forgave. The list in 1 Peter, the list in Romans.
Well, they carried the godlike message, didn't they?
But they surrendered totally to God.
Yeah.
And did not question. They were so obedient and so pure.
Yes.
And Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do.
Overcome evil with good is what they
did. Yes, they did. And that was interesting what Suzanne wrote on the forum about that. When you do that and overcome evil with good, and that I was to you, oh, this is all wonderful. And then it says, in so doing, thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. And Suzanne, what was that explanation?
I wrote, it is probable that it refers to an Egyptian practice of a repentant person carrying on their head some form of vessel with hot coals in it, symbolizing their repentance. So the idea would be to feed and give drink to your enemy so that he or she will repent of their animosity towards you.
Yes.
When the enemy is treated as a friend, when good is returned for evil, then there is a chance evil will be overcome.
Yes.
So, a sign of repentance to have those coals on the head.
Well, and also when you do that, it can enrage a person even more. I mean, Jesus never did a thing. Sometimes people get more angry at you that you're not responding to their anger. And that's when you still got to keep doing it. And if you do it, ultimately there's nothing they can strike on. What can they strike on? You're not, no personal sense of self is there. You have that personal sense of self, they can strike on it. But if you were in that divine state of thought, overcoming evil with good, there's nothing they can strike on.
No, they will have to make up a lie.
Yeah.
About you.
But that could also possibly be changing something in the offender.
But that's it. Ultimately, that is what will happen. It won't happen initially, but ultimately it will. But you've got to keep, you just bow your head low and the darts of error go over it. The arrow that doth wound the dove, what? Darts not from those who watch and love.
And love.
That's your defense. And even though, look what they tried to do to all these people, all of them in the Bible, they rose victorious over it because they refused to hold the personal sense of themselves and get angry and retaliate. But I also want to give just a moment to what Linda wrote about, because this struck me too in the lesson too. Wrath, which is only appeased, is not destroyed, but partially indulged. That's science and health. This is something, because this is how you mesmerize yourself to thinking, oh, I'm not hating anybody. I'm not angry. And what's the definition of appease?
To make quiet, to calm, to pacify.
And to destroy?
To cause, to cease. To put an end to.
And indulge?
To yield to the practice of without restraint or control.
So you see, you think, oh, I'm being loving. You know, I don't hate that person. But then some little incident will happen and it'll come pouring out of you. You might have tried to subdue it, but you haven't pulled it out by the roots. You haven't really studied love your enemies and taking offense. That Mrs. Eddy wrote until it does that healing to truly purify your thoughts so you honestly have no sense of wrath. It's got to be done. And it's wonderful when you do it. And you will grow and be happy and be peaceful and have a oneness with the Father you didn't know possible, which is why these things happen. So we grow. We're going to end now. Reverend Kratzer, Dominion Within, Self-Surrender Through Love. He's talking about a chronic disease in this. It can be a chronic disease. It can be a sin. It can be a lot of things you've had trouble overcoming. So,
as Kratzer writes, there are many cases of chronic disease which are yielding to direct effort through argument in Christian Science only slowly or seemingly thus far not at all, which will soon yield if the direct effort is supplemented by self-surrender through habitual love and gratitude to God, ceasing to take the comforts and blessings of daily living as matters of course, and thinking mostly of those things of which we seem to be deprived, but following the suggestion of the psalmist, so frequently repeated by him, quote, "Oh, that men would praise the Lord for his goodness and for his wonderful works to the children of men," end quote. The ice which is upon the river or lake in midwinter did not form there in a day or a week, but represents the accumulation of the winter's cold. So a chronic disease manifest in the body did not get seated there in a week or a month, but represents the accumulation of months or years of wrong thought and living. Could we turn upon the ice on the lake in midwinter the heat of a midsummer sun? We would cause it to break up and disappear in a very few days, but that is impossible. However, the continued shining of the sun of early spring, dispensing each day a comparatively slight amount of heat, before very long breaks up and melts the ice away. Could we turn upon the accumulation of wrong thought in mortal mind and the resulting disease a large realization of the love and power of God, and we often can, we could cause the disease to break up and wholly disappear in a few hours or days, and this is frequently done. But suppose we cannot command a sufficient realization to do this quickly, yet we can accomplish it before very long if we persistently turn upon the evil condition even a small realization of God's love and power. The first day that the spring sun shines, the ice is apparently not affected at all, nor the second day, nor for many days. But finally, there comes a day when the ice is noticeably affected, even to the point of breaking in pieces. It was not alone that day's sunshine that accomplished this result, but the accumulation of the many days of shining that had gone before. So let us continue to cultivate spiritual thought by any and all methods, especially by love and gratitude to God, whether the disease seems to yield or not. If we do so persistently, not merely spasmodically, there will come a day when the disease will yield markedly. And this will be the result, not merely of the last day's spiritual work, but of the accumulation of our spiritual thought and growth. A wise man of the East has well said, quote, "Let no man think lightly of good, saying in his heart, it will not come nigh unto me. Even by the falling of water drops, a water pot is filled." So the wise man becomes full of good, even if he gather it little by little. Even a good man sees evil days, so long as his good thoughts and deeds do not ripen. But when his good thoughts and deeds ripen, then does the good man see good things. End quote. Ripen, to approach or come to perfection. To bring to perfection, to fit or prepare, as to ripen one for heaven.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.